through this year, we are now approaching $4 million that we've recovered in fees, and just under half of that is actually school taxes. I think it benefits a lot of the, not only the county, but it benefits the school, and we've seen this across many communities from Claymont all the way down the Smyrna line. We've had success stories.
Hi, Matt Meyer, County Executive, host of today's Pod County, back with Kyle Grantham, the producer excellence of Pod County. Today we're talking about the Vacant Spaces to Livable Places initiative. You know, there are vacant properties, vacant delinquent properties all over America, and at the same time, there's a huge crisis in housing affordability. One thing I hear all the time is, why don't we just take these vacant houses, rehab them, and put people in them? Well, we've tried to do that over the last 7 years here in New Castle County. Tune in and hear what happened.
Yeah, this is a really incredible program. I can remember we actually had one of these houses in our neighborhood, and just the threat of the county taking it and rehabbing it was enough to get the person who had left it abandoned to sell it, and that has returned $40,000 over the last 4 years into the county coffers through property taxes. So that's money that otherwise was just sitting out there. So a really, really impressive program, and we're going to talk about how this has transformed the vacant housing issue in New Castle County to something that's actually become a strength and helped a lot of people.
Lessons for the country and for the world in public policy here on Pod County. Welcome to this episode of Pod County. We are talking about housing. I was elected in 2016. To get elected, along with a couple of volunteers, knocked on nearly 10,000 doors. One thing I heard over and over and over again is, hey, Mr. Meyer, I don't know much about you, but there's a vacant, dilapidated house or houses on my block in my neighborhood. It's terrible. No one's doing anything about it. The police are here. There are problems. Why don't we do something about it? People need housing. We came into office, we put together a group. Joe Day, who's here, the Assistant Land Use General Manager, showed me a list of 1,350 vacant delinquent properties, a backlog about which he had no power to do anything. Kerry Casey, currently the General Manager of Community Services Department in the county, educated me that there was a executive order signed in the wake of the 2008 housing crisis to not foreclose or take any property, I think for good reason, to protect vulnerable individuals. But it led to this problem of all these vacant delinquent properties and our land use department and county government not really having the power to do anything. Along came Andrea Allman, my chief of staff. We sat down and said, let's put together a program that's actually going to work. The consequence now, a few years later, is hundreds of additional properties on the private market, many, many, many less calls to police, paramedics, 911 that cost the taxpayers because of these dilapidated properties, and a whole lot of tax revenue for the schools, over $3 million for the schools, a lot for county services as well. So we wanted to come together and talk about how we did this. I know a lot of other jurisdictions in Delaware and New Castle County and across the country are dealing with this exact problem right now. There's a tremendous need for housing, and I think it's painful for all of us to see vacant delinquent properties in our neighborhood. Doing something about it can be even more challenging. Why don't we start right next to me, Kerry Casey, the General Manager of Land Use, one of the foremost thinkers and doers on affordable housing policy in the state of Delaware. Welcome, Kerry.
Thank you.
So what do you think? What do we do?
Well, first of all, thank you for putting some attention on this really important issue. Back in that time period, thanks to work that Andrea Allman, the Chief of Staff, who's here, and Joe Day, Land Use, we started talking about putting together a interdepartmental, big word there, working group of agencies that touch a vacant home. So we could begin meeting, discussing, and developing, which was your mandate to us, a single unified approach to addressing vacant housing in the county. So first we looked at the departments in county government that work directly on a vacant house, so i.e. land use, code enforcement. But we also brought in the planning department of land use because we wanted to make sure what we were doing was looked at through several land use lenses. We also brought the Department of Finance, really important because obviously all of that money that was on the vacant property back, taxes, code fees, etc. Our Department of Finance was really interested in getting that funding back, as well as the Office of Law, because we knew the one big tool we had for addressing vacant parcels was sheriff sales. So we brought in the Office of Law to help us with that. Department of Community Services, which is the department that I work for, we do a lot of work in distressed communities, buying vacant properties, renovating them with grant funds, and selling them to income-eligible home buyers. So we were really interested in being involved because we wanted to get our hands on some of these vacant properties to get a better use out of them. And then we looked at external partners that you wouldn't necessarily think of working on vacant properties, so public safety or county police that had perspectives on properties that they were going to visit due to, you know, legal activity happening in vacant properties. We also brought in the sheriff's department because we knew we would have to work closely with them on bringing these properties to sheriff sale. And lastly, we needed leadership, which came from the county executive's office. So having a representative at the time, which still is, Andrea Allman, the chief of staff, to keep us pushing along. So we formed this group, and we began to meet every Friday and develop comprehensive policies and procedures through executive orders. We had state legislation we proposed, so we began to work that angle. And there you have it. I mean, basically, this working group worked together to establish and implement a vacant initiative that we really, I feel like, had a lot of success in because we had this collaborative approach. And we all benefited from it, I think, I would say. Would you agree, Joe?
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
Joe, I remember our initial conversations about this. If you don't mind me saying so, you were a bit frustrated because you, overseeing or working with code enforcement officers every day, were seeing problems. And there's nothing more frustrating for police officers, paramedics, even nurses and doctors to see the same problem over and over and over again and know there are solutions out there and they're not being utilized.
Yeah, that's correct. I think I was just translating what the code enforcement officers were feeling every day. They would go to a property, a vacant property, that they would, you know, write tickets on, we would do abatements on, and then they'd go back in the next month and kind of really start all over again. When a property owner does not pay attention to our notices or we don't get results, it does get frustrating, and I believe the code officers felt that and felt like they weren't making much of a difference in some neighborhoods, at least with the vacant properties.
So, Andre Allman, my chief of staff, who I work with every single day, I said, Andre, this is great. We've identified a problem. There seemed like in various silos, dare I say, or offices of county government, there are some ideas for a solution. Not only do you need to put it together and get people talking to each other, but we got to see results. It only matters if we're able to take some of these vacant delinquent properties and convert them to something that's useful for housing. So what do we do?
So as Carrie articulated, first we started pulling the various departments of county government as well as outside stakeholders together to put together the process. We understood that we needed a consistent start to finish process that would be able to identify parcels, make sure that we prioritize them based on various feedback, including our public safety partners, and then start the process of notifying those homeowners to say, we know that you have more than $5,000 in back taxes, back code fees due to the county, and we're paying attention, and we are engaging with you to rectify the situation. In most cases, property owners get a notice from our Office of Law, or what we call our 10-day demand letter, and they respond to it. They get in touch, they go on a payment plan, or they pay off their back taxes. In some cases, though, properties don't respond, and they continue to rack up additional fees without dealing with the situation. And with our process, that allows us to then escalate. We notify them that we will be potentially taking them to sheriff's sale if they continue to not comply. I think another important piece of this, of the program that we haven't yet touched upon, is the way we also identify parcels that we may want to come back into county control. Carrie, in looking at it from a housing lens, is very sensitive to the fact that there are some parcels that that may benefit from nonprofit developer involvement, or perhaps where the county may have grant funding to be able to to remedy those houses and turn them into opportunities for affordable housing. So that's another key part of the program is early identification of parcels that might potentially benefit from additional involvement to ensure that they become available for affordable housing.
So what you're saying, there are a lot of properties out here for which there's a market. And so we can use legal mechanisms to put them through the sheriff sale process. A bidder will win. They'll pay off county fees, and then we'll go in private hands, and we'll be sold off. It'll be rehabilitated, renovated, and it's a private home. And if I live next door to that home, I'm pretty happy, right, that now it's not some dilapidated overgrown. The hardest problem is when you bring it to a sheriff's sale and nobody bids. Nobody wants that property. In many cases, the liability exceeds any revenue or any value. So if it costs $60,000 or $70,000 or more to cut the grass and gut the thing and rebuild it, or, you know, $100,000, $200,000, why would I pay to do that when the value after all that would only be $50,000 or $60,000 or $80,000? So Carrie, can you talk a little bit about what do we do in those situations?
Yeah, so that's a really good question, and we looked at that from all angles. What we created, not to get in the weeds, is an acquisition disposition strategy, because Newcastle County historically was very nervous about owning a bunch of parcels, because that would mean that we would be responsible for those parcels, and if no one wanted those parcels, we could end up having them for a long period of time. So the executive order, which you signed, thank you for doing that, would allow a team got together after the sheriff's sale, approximately 3 weeks after the sheriff's sale, and looked at the properties that went to sheriff's sale. First thing we looked at is making sure that the people that bid on the properties actually at sheriff's sale didn't owe us any back taxes of more than $1,000 per unit or code fees, because
so we don't want bad
we
people.
Don't want speculators. Yeah. And we create, that was state legislation we had to pass, which allowed us to have a pre-qualification bidder process, which you learn we didn't have a ton of problems with that, which is a good thing, but we were prepared if we did, because we could then cancel the sale or make them pay out of the proceeds of the sale. So we had a lot of tools for that. And then we looked at the parcels that came back to Newcastle County. And we looked at those parcels with three different lenses. One, whether or not we, the Department of Community Services, had grant funds to be able to do something with that property. And in that case, we took ownership of that property or parcel, and we did that for probably a half a dozen homes. Two, we looked at maybe we should just sell the parcel. A lot of it was land, because, you know, Joe's group demolishing a structure would create a higher. We put the full price of what it had cost Newcastle County for that parcel to sheriff sale. We didn't discount it. So if it cost $60,000, the lot might have only been worth $30,000. Some of those parcels, we said, you know what? Let's just put it on the open market, MLS system.
So you would say,
we would just sell it.
So you'd say, okay, it costs $60,000 for Joe and the land use department to demolish a property or to fix the windows or whatever. And so we put it on the market for $60,000 plus whatever fees.
Well, yeah. We took it to sheriff's sale
Sorry, we took it to sheriff's sale.
Yep.
And then nobody bids.
Nobody bids.
So they're like, you know, private, this is only worth $30,000.
Right.
Why would I pay?
Right.
So they don't bid, which you probably expect guess that they're not going to bid. And then when we're in this position where we're stuck, where a lot of cities, particularly across the country, some counties get stuck, you said, let's just sell it. Let's hire an agent and sell it in the open market. And whatever we sell it for, we'll take the money.
And so we would get a broker's price opinion, and then we would sell it. And every single lot has sold, a couple of them, for more than they even went to a sheriff's sale. Because the sheriff's sale, you have a very limited pool of people buying. You have to have everything up front. So we felt that was really successful. I think we got like over $600,000 through that process.
Wow. And once it's sold, obviously, they're now paying taxes every
year. And there's an incentive to do something with it. And we've seen lots in some of our more distressed communities where they've, like this, you know, infill developer builds a really nice house and sells it for like over $200,000. To me, that's the biggest success, because we aren't putting a lot of work into it.
That's a great lead-in for Chief of Staff for the County Executive Andre Allman to tell us about one of our favorite properties in one of our favorite neighborhoods. Talk about the property on Single Ave in Collins Park. Andre, what happened with 220 Single Ave? What did it start with? What was the problem, and how did we fix it?
So this is one of our favorite before and after stories. And if you could see the photos, I know we're working with the medium where you all listeners can't see them, but you would really see a dramatic difference in our before and after images. This is a property that had been vacant since 1999 and owed $15,000 in back taxes and code fees that they had racked up over the years. And Joe and his team have visited this property over 108 times for cutting the grass, for boarding up windows, for responding to various neighborhood complaints. We also had over 30 public safety responses, calls for service for our public safety partners, whether that's police, EMS, et cetera. And so you can imagine being a neighbor, you know, in this neighborhood, either being next door, being across the street, seeing the condition of this property, how frustrated you might be. We know, you know, the data shows us that when you have vacant properties on blocks, there is 3.2 times as many calls for police and over 1.8 times as many theft calls and twice the number of violent incident calls as blocks without vacant buildings.
Which means, sorry to interrupt, but not only is it bad for the neighbors, it's bad for me as a taxpayer. Because this is you said 3.2 times as many drug calls to police through the vacant property. That means a lot of my tax dollars going to take care of this property.
Correct. And neighbors understandably get frustrated from that perspective as well. I'm a tax-paying parcel owner. I'm maintaining my home. I am, you know, following all the rules, and my neighbor next door has let their property really go into disarray, and it has attracted unwanted behavior in the community. You can understand how people get really frustrated. Calls to your office increase as these kinds of incidents go up. So this is a classic case where this program that we developed and that we're talking about today allowed us to communicate with the property owner, let that property owner know that Newcastle County is serious about them coming into compliance. They did not respond, and we took the property to sheriff's sale in 2019. We ended up buying the property back because nobody bid on it, and then we sold it in the process that Carrie just articulated on the open market, and a builder built a new home there, a beautiful new home that we just drove past the other day, and it sold on the open market as a fully fledged home for over $230,000. This property is now contributing annually over $2,300 in property taxes that go toward your schools and toward your county services. It's providing a home, a beautiful home for a family, and is definitely provided an improvement in the community. And the neighbors are pleased. This is the flip side of the feedback that we hear. Once a property has been improved, the neighborhood does see and appreciate that.
Thanks, Andrea, and thanks for everyone's work on that property. There are 600, 700 some stories like that. And we owe a great debt of gratitude to these three individuals, Andrea, Joe, and Carrie, and of course their teams for doing a lot of work on this. Now, Joe, can you talk a little bit about how a property becomes vacant? There might be somebody listening now who's like, wait a second, there's that house across the street that's been vacant. Who do I call? What do I do? Is it something that should be registered or not?
So most of the vacants that we've seen at the beginning of the process were really mortgage foreclosures. And it may have been in the very early stage of the mortgage foreclosure or very late. But what we've seen is a lot of property owners get notice from their mortgage company that foreclosure action was about to proceed. And those property owners really just packed up and walked away. So we had a lot of those. There was a lot of properties where we've had the death of the property owner and their estate was never opened. So there was, you know, it remained vacant. The family didn't do anything with it. We've had many properties where the heirs have inherited the house, but really have no means or plan to maintain or dispose of the house. Those are the main reasons we see properties become vacant. So any property that is vacant for more than 90 days is required to be registered. So that registration process is very easy. A property owner can register online through the Department of Land Use website. And annually, the department sends out a notice on November 1st, letting those property owners know that as of January 1st, their vacant property registration fee is due. But if neighbors or community members see vacant properties and have questions, they should call 302-395-5555, and they can report the property, obviously giving us the address and telling us why they believe it's vacant. You can also go on to Department of Land Use website, and you can register a complaint online completely anonymously.
And then what do you do? I've worked with plenty of governments. You submit a form, and then that's that. Mm-hmm. And you just don't hear, and then you got to call the county executive 12 times before anything happens.
So once the property is reported, any vacant property in our vacant property inventory, a code enforcement officer inspects every 30 days. If the officer goes out there and inspects and there's no violations, we continue just to inspect monthly. If he goes out, or he or she goes out and there are code violations, those code violations are written up, notices provided to the owner, and then we start the abatement process. If you report a code or a property online, it gives you a customer service number, and then you can go back online with that customer service number and see our process. All the notes, all the different actions that we would take for that case are actually available online.
Carrie, we've talked a lot about the private market, but Habitat for Humanity has been involved. Two Fish Development has been involved, Interfaith Community. How do they get it? Everything we've said so far, either somebody buys it in a sheriff's sale, or it's not bought, and so we get an agent to go sell it.
Sure.
What do these organizations have to do with it?
That's a great question. It's sort of the third prong in our acquisition disposition strategy. We will bring some parcels, and those are all recommended by the team that looks at these parcels, through our division of purchasing to do a bid, a public bid, out into the universe to ask for interested parties, and they don't have to be nonprofits, they can be for-profits, asking them to bid on the property and asking them in detail to put what they're going to do with the property. So we've had a lot of success. Habitat actually got two parcels next to each other where they bid in a public bid process through our division of purchasing, saying we would like to create two homes for home buyers. And if you will donate the lots to us, we can build these properties in a short period of time. And we already have homeowners identified. So then a group of people review those bids and award to the Habitats of the World, Interfaith Housing, as well as Two Fish. We also had a really unique property bid, which was in Minkledale, which Joe's aware of, where a group called Duffy's Hope bid on the property. And what they wanted to do was put a modular home unit, it's beautiful, for kids, youth aging out of foster care. So the committee reviewed that. There's such a need, as we know, for housing for youth aging out of foster care. We just cut a ribbon on that about a month or so ago. These are the kind of unique things we're able to do through the acquisition disposition strategy. So case in point, Duffy's Hope being able to put a beautiful new property for use for, I think it's up to 6 youth aging out of foster care. So that's what the kind of the third prong in our approach. We really wanted to look at it all angles is to say, hey, let's put it out there and see what we get. And we've been getting some really, really awesome things. Habitat, Duffy's Hope, et cetera. You know, looking at it, we also have a really strong housing market, which helps too. But, you know, we wanted to have some control over what happens to these parcels. So that's one way through the purchasing department that we can have control over it, which is good because we want a positive outcome.
I think Housing Alliance of Delaware says that there's something like 12,000 affordable housing units.
Yeah, I think it's like closer to
20,000, I think, statewide.
Right. Us, we're like 10,000.
10,000, yeah. And if this is, you know, 500 or 600 that we've already done right there, that's like 5%
right.
of the need. So it's significant.
Right, and we want to have control now. I feel like I've become like a control freak, but we need to have control over what happens in distressed communities. So if we can get control of a property, not a speculator that's going to sit on it for another 5 years, and we can do and renovate it and put a home buyer in it, that to me, that helps stabilize the whole community. That's our perspective through community services lens. And so that's why we really were involved in what happens to the property if it doesn't sell.
Almost like a zero-profit housing developer driven by people, not profit.
Exactly. And also, we didn't want to discount those properties. We wanted to make sure the full price was put on it so we could have control. Because no one is going to say, I'm going to pay $60,000 for a lot worth $30,000. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay.
No, absolutely. It's got to work in the market.
Right. It's kind of a land bank without the land bank in some ways.
Yeah.
I just wanted to kind of touch on our success stories again. I know you've touched on it a little bit. But so out of the approximately 280 properties that we've referred for share of sale, that the vacant munitions review team has approved for share of sale, actually only 87 of them went to share of
sale. So why?
So many of those, and it was touched on a little bit earlier, but many of those responded after we sent a demand letter. So the demand letter we see is very successful. About a third of the properties settle or it really what it forces people to do is make decisions on the property. They're going to keep it, they're going to sell it, they're going to pay it down, they're going to renovate it. So, but about a third of them went and resolved the issues after the demand letter, and then about another third resolved the issues after we actually filed the minition. I guess they really thought at that point, hey, they are going to move forward with the sheriff's sale, so let me take care of it.
Sorry to interrupt, but that's instructive potentially for other jurisdictions. All we had to do with a third of our vacant properties, you send a letter that has teeth. The community knows, hey, these guys are serious. If I don't take this seriously, they're going to do something. So then we don't have to do anything else. They act. And for another third, they don't act, but then we go and file. Once we file, they act. So two-thirds, an overwhelming majority, we didn't have to do a whole lot.
That's right. Well, it is a lot of work to get into that far. But then another 87 actually went to sheriff sale. And so when we're looking at the 87, we had talked, four were bought back and renovated by community services. Four were sold to nonprofit developers. 14 were sold on the open market, and another 65 were sold through MLS and are now occupied and maintained. So we are now approaching, through this year, we are now approaching $4 million that we've recovered in fees, and just under half of that is actually school taxes. I think it benefits a lot of not only the county, but it benefits the school. And we've seen this across many communities from Claymont all the way down the Smyrna line. We've had success stories in Overlook Colony and Dartmouth Woods and Clearfield and Creek Landing. So it isn't just the lower income neighborhoods. It's it's neighborhoods throughout with all income levels.
That $4 million, nearly $4 million you spoke of, that really understates it, because that's one time when people pay. But that, of course, what happens next is even more important in terms of financially. Then you have a private owner who's presumably the overwhelming majority, according to our stats, 99.6%, are paying taxes every year. And so not only, and of course the liability is reduced too, because you don't have all the 911 calls, police calls, et cetera.
And you're helping the neighborhood too. It helps them stabilize for everyone in the neighborhood, because vacant houses can bring down home prices.
That's right.
So it's good.
That's good stuff. So, Joe, we've done this. We put this group together. It seems to be working well. We have numbers to show. And during an affordable housing crisis, as Carrie just stated and often reminds all of us, this is a key element to making houses just a little bit more affordable in a market that too often is unaffordable. What's next? What do we do from here? How do we make sure this continues?
Obviously, we'll continue to maintain this system, and I think we're doing a good job. The county will always have a certain amount of vacant properties due to deaths and properties for sale, but we monitor them. We'll continue recommending for sheriff sales the properties to meet the criteria. But I also think we've started to identify vacant commercial properties that we can move to through the munitions and sheriff sale process. We've already started identifying vacant lots. Before, we were really concentrating on structures, so now we've also went to vacant lots, and we are also working with the Housing Advisory Board to strengthen the rental code. We believe that'll help improve our housing stock, really for the most vulnerable.
Carrie, anything else?
Just appreciate, I think having an idea, and Joe and I have worked together a long time, and I really, really, really appreciate all the work that he does. Having an idea, which, Joe and I talked about, is one thing. Having it become a county-wide initiative really takes leadership. So, it's really important to say, I'm really going to shout out Andrea here, because she was at every Friday meeting, and then some of those meetings got contentious, FYI, because we all have different perspectives. And I've learned to be a little more flexible, okay? I know I've been talking about control, but I think I know what needs to be done, but having the different perspectives is really, really important. And I think that's what made the process so successful, because we really did work through all these different perspectives. But Andrea being at every meeting, having your leadership, we overly communicated with county council, by the way. That was another really big part, because we wanted, it's really important that the focus was on vacants, because we don't want to, having occupied property, that's a little sticky for me personally, and really wanting to make sure that we focused on the most, the properties that were causing the most problems in a community. So we over-communicated with county council, which was helpful, but having the leadership from the county executive, from Andrea, we really had to have some leadership, same pushing us like the wind beneath the wings of this idea. So, I just want to say thank you the county executive, and to Andrea, and also my colleague Joe, but that we had that support, right? Because you might have an idea and you might have a thought of how we can do something, but you really pushed us forward. So I just wanted to say thanks for that.
It's good to hear. It's also important to shout out again County Council, not only informing them, but they've been fully supportive. There are many issues that immediately come to top of mind in which County Council is not unified, but with respect to this issue, just thinking back with each ordinance and with each update, while there's been very helpful feedback from a number of county council persons, it's hard to think of in any way there has been any serious disagreement or contention. It's amazing what we can do when departments of government work in collaboration with county council, and even at times the state legislature as well needs to be shouted out, the things we can do. Andrea?
I just want to close with a thought about one of the reasons why this team has been successful is that we have every 6 months or so taken a look back and said, what have we learned? What do we need to adapt? What do we need to change as the program has continued to evolve? And I think that's another important component for any, you know, organization, government that might be looking at a program like this. You have to take stock, look back, learn from those experiences, and continue to iterate as conditions change and as the needs of the communities change. And so I want to thank Carrie, Joe, the other members of our team who representing the Office of Law, the Office of Finance, for the continued work on the program and identifying ways that we continue to move it forward. And thank you to our county executive for setting the path and for ensuring that the team had the support needed to continue to work through all the issues that we identified early on.
Thanks so much. This is a great example of government problem solving, a complex problem that a number of departments are working with, from public safety to housing to finance to land use, law, of course. And we appreciate your collaboration, each of your approaches, in really getting something accomplished for the people of this county, a model for the country. So thank you so much. This is Pod County showing off some of our great work here in the First County in the First State.